What is happening, everyone? It's Coach Ishak with HawkFit Coaching and Legion Athletics and your host of today's episode for Anabolic Radio. I'm joined today by David Mathis, who's a Army Combat Medic veteran, and he's a coach with Team BioLane, and he also has a master's in exercise science, which he finished up not too long ago, right?
Yeah, mid-December.
Nice, yeah. Man. Congrats. I bet it feels awesome to be done with that.
It does, especially, I was one of the older ones in my program. I'm 35. Obviously, we'll get into some backstory, but I went back later after the Army and stuff, and I'm ready to be done with school. I'm not ready to finish learning, but I'm ready to be done with school. So the learning process is always never ending. So
nice, man. Nice. So we have a great episode planned for you guys today. It is that time of year where a lot of people are starting to gear up for these body composition related goals they have. And what better way to help provide value with talking about a lot of the implications that are associated with calorie restriction or dieting and the physiological and psychological downsides that are also associated with it. So David, why don't you take the floor and give us a little background about your story and, how it got you to where you're currently at.
Yeah. So, like I previously mentioned, I'm 35. I know I look like I'm about 21. I get that a lot. I've been passionate about bodybuilding, just fitness in general, since I was a little kid. I was playing sports from a really young age. I've always been athletic, baseball, basketball, tennis, hockey, all that stuff growing up. I actually first got introduced to exercise science when I was about maybe 11, 12 years old. My middle sister, Lindsay, actually, we grew up in Indiana, just kind of right over the border from Chicago in Valparaiso. So if any of your listeners are familiar with Valparaiso, Indiana, that's where I'm from. But she actually went to Arizona State for exercise science. And this is, I'm talking, 97 timeframe. Mm-hmm. So everything that everybody knows about exercise science now and about the fitness industry did not exist back then. I can really remember still buying the magazines. Like, that was my first introduction. Like, I'm in that era. Like, I'm in the magazine era and stuff. But so that's where I kind of first got introduced to, like, hey, you can actually go get a degree in this stuff. I was an athlete growing up. I actually didn't go do my undergrad in exercise science. I actually took a different route and did business management. And that's something that always bothered me for a long time, because I kind of put my passion on the back burner. And kind of did what the safe route was at that time. Because like I said, this wasn't a big field back in the early 2000s. I graduated in 2003. So, what we know about exercise science programs and research and the research that I'll get into a little bit that we were doing at University of South Florida did not exist the way that it does now. And I'm kind of glad that I was able to still go that route, because it's really helping me. The business aspect is really helping me in coaching now. So it's definitely was useful, but, I went to college, graduated, had fun. I moved down to Florida in 2007. I graduated from Indiana University, and that passion of training and wanting to be a trainer and help people had never left me. So I decided to, get some personal training certifications. I did, my first one was ACSM. I did the American College of Sports Medicine personal training certification. I also, this was around 07, 08 time. This is when CrossFit really started taking off. I actually flew out to San Diego and got my level one CrossFit certification.
No way.
It's a lot different now than it was back then. But I guess you can technically say I'm still CrossFit certified. I don't really do it anymore. I did do it for quite a long time. And actually the first gym when I was down here in Florida that I started personal training at was kind of a CrossFit style gym. So got some experience working hands-on with clients, bodybuilding clients, general weight loss clients, CrossFit clients. And then 2008 happened and the economy hit. I don't know how many of your listeners will really understand what it was like at that time, but it was pretty bad. The economy got pretty bad. Nobody was paying for personal training. Nobody was paying for any of that stuff. And I'm like, listen, I don't want to stick with my desk job. Like, this wasn't for me. So I looked into the Army. I knew I wanted to go back to school. It was kind of really always bugging me. As soon as I graduated from Indiana University, I'm like, why didn't I do what I wanted to do? Like, why? And I'm like, you know what? This is a perfect opportunity. You know, I'm very patriotic. I have tons of family members that served in various branches of the military. I'm like, this is what I want to do right now. This is, I think, is a good thing. It's a secure job. It's honorable, and it's going to set me up for the future. So I went and enlisted in the Army, which in hindsight, I should have gone in as an officer because I already had a degree, but they weren't going to guarantee me a spot in the medical field. And that's the reason why I wanted to go in. I wanted to get experience. I wanted to help people in the closest realm I could to health and nutrition, which would have been in the medical field. So I was a combat medic in the Army for 4 years. Mm. I was deployed to Iraq in 2010, 2011. And that time frame was really interesting because I was actually decided that I wanted to stay in it and make it a career. And so I applied for officer candidate school. They actually flew me around to different bases in Iraq and interviewed with different generals while I was deployed. I got the okay. I got the sign off, like everything. And my paperwork didn't get sent back in time. So I got denied. And I was going to have to wait a whole nother year to, you know, reapply, go through the whole process again. And that kind of left a pretty bitter taste in my mouth. You know, for a long time, that was something that really, really ate away at me. I look at it differently now. I can kind of see where it was kind of a blessing. But it did lead me to start to stir up some things from my past and some feelings that I was feeling. A lot of fear, a lot of anger, a lot of disappointment from other things that happened in the past that I never properly dealt with. And I started taking back control the one way that I knew how, and that was controlling my food and controlling my exercise. I'm not even exaggerating, man, when I tell you, like, I was doing 3 or 4 workouts a day. I was doing like 1500 burpees a day. I would get up before PT in the Army. We'd do PT at like 5. I'd get up at 3 and go to the 24-hour gym on base first. And then go, like, it's one of those things where I had so many feelings that I was dealing with that I didn't know how to deal with. And my way to take back control and feel like I was in control, because the Army takes a lot of control from you. The military, that's what they do. You are not in control anymore. And I think that kind of started escalating, and those feelings started escalating in me and started kind of, you know, making me remember things from my past that felt, made me feel the same way. I started getting depressed. I started, you know, I never was like a purger. Like, I was anorexic, but I was never a purger. My purging was overexercising. That was my form of purging. So I began restricting what I was eating, doing tons of exercise, just to kind of cope with all these feelings that I was feeling. Had nothing to do with the food, had nothing to do with body image, nothing to do with exercise in general. I mean, but it kind of led me down a dark path, and I wasn't dealing with things in a healthy way. I want to say it was November of 2011. It's kind of funny. I was stationed up outside of Seattle at Joint Base Lewis-McChord. And we were doing a PT test, and it was a little chilly at that time in Seattle in November in the morning. And I remember what happened. I was the PT guy in my unit. Like, everybody knew me as the PT guy. I was the athletic one, all that stuff. Well, I was running like 11-minute 2 miles for my PT test. Damn. At that time, like, easily blowing out the push-ups, the sit-ups. It just wasn't an issue. So I actually remember I did a 2 mile run for my next PT test, and I got like, I want to say I got like 13 minutes. So still great time.
For sure.
But, But for me as a perfectionist, and that's another big key in this, is I was a big perfectionist, still kind of am. I was like, oh God, you know, like I must be getting sick. Something's wrong. Like no clue in my mind. I had an eating disorder, nothing like that. Cause you're just not in your right brain at that point. So I went to the doctor. I'm like, I'm sick. Like something's wrong with me. I don't know. And luckily my doctor on base was the same PA that went over with us to Iraq. So he knew me, we knew each other. He knew what was going on. He sent me over to the hospital. He could see something was wrong. They checked me in, ran some blood tests, and they never let me leave. This was like December 1st, I believe, of 2011. And what was supposed to be just an overnight blood test sort of thing, keeping me, I ended up being checked into the ICU because like I was failing like that. Organs were failing. Everything was on the downhill. I had gotten down to 92, 93 pounds.
Damn.
My resting heart rate, and this is no joke, guys, it was 25.
Damn.
Yeah. I wish I could remember what my blood pressure was, but it was like pretty much non-existent. You know, it was one of those things where I went in at that time for a reason. I'll still never know what that reason is, but something told me to go in. Still was not thinking it was an eating disorder. I thought that maybe I picked up something in Iraq or, you know, all these other, because you're I don't want to say delusional. That's the wrong word. You're just
like
not
sort of like at the tail end of a contest prep, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're just so focused on improvement and fat loss and you don't really see how much progress you made.
Yeah. And I didn't really have the type of people around me, the support system that I needed. I had a great unit. I have great friends in it, but nobody really knew what to do, right? They didn't know what signs to look out for and all that stuff. And I'm glad I went in when I did. I'm glad my PA did what he did and admit me to the hospital. I deteriorated real quick at that point. Like it was right on the verge. They literally flew my parents. The military flew my parents up to base because I wasn't supposed to make it through the night. I was hooked up to tubes, machinery. Man. Like my resting heart rate was 25. Like that's pretty damn close to dead. So they flew them up there to kind of be with me. Luckily, I started taking a little bit of a turn for the better. But I was in the ICU. I was up in that hospital for a month. They ran about $300,000, $400,000 worth of tests on me, ruling out like cancer, like all this stuff. When in reality, I think everybody knew from the beginning it was an eating disorder. I didn't. I wasn't willing to accept it. It wasn't even a thought in my mind, but everybody mm-hmm. else kind of knew. But they had to rule everything out. And then once everything came back clean, I mean, I did liver biopsies, I did colonoscopies, they did everything. They threw the gamut at me trying to find something wrong with me other than an eating disorder. But when it came down to the end of the day, man, that's what it was. I was very, very, I had a lot of pushback. I was like, no, you know, denial sort of thing. They sent me to some inpatient rehab centers where I continued to sabotage myself, you know, just finding ways to still carry out my eating disorder habits, over-exercise in my room when nobody was looking, like just doing stuff. It's a dark place when you get to. It's a very, very dark mental space you get to. And not a lot of people understand that. A lot of people feel like they understand it when they go through a prep and they get deep down low, but it's a whole new level. It's a whole new level other than that. You are literally not in your right brain. I kept describing it to people at times where like I felt like I was out of my body and I was looking down at all this stuff I was doing, but I could not control it. Like mentally, I knew what I was doing was wrong, but I like could not control it. And it's a very, very scary place to be in. But after a while, man, a couple of years of in and out of inpatient treatments and outpatient treatments, I can't even tell you to this day what it was that made me decide, but I just kind of like sat there one day. You know, I started smoking a lot, I started drinking a lot, just really self-destructive habits, right? And I just was sitting there on my back porch one day and I was like, what the hell am I doing? Like, what is this? This is not a life. You know, I was still like 110 pounds. Like, I wasn't that much healthier. I was healthy enough to get released from an inpatient facility, but I was like, I need more help. So we found a really, really great treatment facility here in Florida. I went back in with the right mindset this time. Luckily, the VA covered it for me. It's a very expensive treatment center, but it was what I needed. And I was ready. That's the big thing, is I was ready for help at that point. Spent about 6 months in there, and then realized, you know, talked to the therapist, got physically healthy again, got nutrients back in me, started thinking correctly again, and realized, you know what, I'm going to use this experience and I'm going to finally do what the hell I wanted to do a long time ago. I'm going to be, and I've always loved bodybuilding my whole life. I was like, I am going to be the best bodybuilding coach. I'm going to help people not feel the way that I've felt for many years now. I'm going to, you know, use my story, not be ashamed, not be embarrassed. I'm going to use my story to help people, because the hell that I went through mentally and emotionally is nothing I wish upon anybody. I still have a hard time looking at those pictures of me, and I bring them up every now and then, like every couple months, because I get new followers that don't really know my story. I think it's important to keep refreshing it and talking about it, because that's one of the issues I see a lot with just our industry in general right now, is there is a lot of that going on. Maybe not to the severity that I experienced, but there is a huge amount of body dysmorphia. There's a huge, huge prevalence of eating disorders, even though people might not recognize that they're eating disorders, right? Or disordered eating. I kind of interchange the terms a little bit. I know they kind of sound alike to people, but they're not really the same. They're kind of in different context how you use it. Because when you get down into contest prep, everybody has disordered eating at that point.
For sure.
Doesn't mean you have an eating disorder. That is a huge, huge diagnosis right there. And that's something that I think is important for people to understand too. But I think that there's a lot of great things that are being done in our industry. I think there's a lot of things that I think are really shitty and leading people down bad paths. You know, everybody loves the 10 and 20,000 calorie challenges, and yeah, they're entertaining, but when done so in a way to portray a positive message and make sure people understand that this is not the healthiest way to go about doing things and stuff like that. And I'm not just even talking about that in general. There's a lot of other things posts people make and just content people put out that I think the normal public doesn't have the perception to kind of rationalize. And I think
like
it's important.
Like a mukbang. People have all this. I don't know if you've seen them on Instagram or something. They just like eat and they have like a mic right next to them eating, or it's just another play on what you're talking about. You know, a lot of people go on overboard with food, for example.
And I get the entertainment value. Like I'm not a prude. Like I've got a lot of friends that do stuff like that, and I have no issue with them doing that. I just think that there needs to be alongside that education and stuff that it's kind of stuff that I try to provide from my past history to try to explain to people, like, these are some signs and symptoms. If you're experiencing this, you know, get help, but you don't be ashamed. Don't be embarrassed, but just kind of bring it more to the forefront, because I think that eating disorders, body dysmorphia, I think all of that is very prevalent in the fitness industry. And I think that when people are going into their first competition, for their first prep, I think that the more that we can educate people and make them understand, you know, these are some of the things you're going to go through. These are some of the feelings that you're going to have. These are some of the thoughts that are going to enter your mind. It doesn't mean that they're real, right? They're real at the time, but you need to be strong enough to understand that this is a phase, and that as soon as you get done with this prep, you need to be just as excited as into the next phase, into your growing phase. And just kind of help people with more of the mental side of prep and dieting in general, get through some of those disordered eating thoughts that might start occurring, and help them manage those a little bit better. So I try to do that through my story a little bit, explaining the things. I have the talk with most of my clients as soon as they start with me, especially if they are doing an extended fat loss or a prep or something like that. Like, hey, you know, we need to keep on top of the psychological approach just as much as we need to with the numbers, with your macros and your training and stuff like that. So adding more of a psychological component to coaching, I think going through what I went through has really helped me relate to my clients and through the content I try to put out. So
for sure, 1000%, man, all great points. And this makes for a super unique episode, right? Because you have your situation on one side of the spectrum, and then we have my situation, which is like exact opposite of what you were dealing with, right? And, you know, awesome story, and I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you overcame that struggle, man.
Thank you.
What would you say the biggest takeaway you learned from that entire experience was?
That's a really good question. I would say that I am mentally stronger than I gave myself credit for. There are a lot of people that lose their lives to eating disorders. It is a very, very tragic mental illness. And that's what it is. It's a mental illness. And there's a lot of people that feel ashamed and embarrassed to ask for help, men and women. And like I said, I don't know why that day I was sitting out on my back steps of my apartment, you know, smoking a cigar, drinking God knows how many Jack and Cokes that was for me that day, and just destroying my body. I don't know what made me that day decide, like, this is not the life I want to live. This is not me. This is not who I grew up being. This is not the strong, independent man that my family raised me to be. I don't know what made me think that day, but there's a lot of people that can't ever get that thought and ask for the help that is needed. That was the moment when, you know, I realized this isn't what I want to do anymore. I'm ready mentally to get whatever help is needed, take however much time it's going to take to get the help, and have that clear vision of where I wanted to be. And no joke, man, like sitting here right now doing podcasts, talking to you, doing podcasts I've done with Dr. Mike and Spencer Nadolski and other people, and being in the position to connect with Lane, be a part of, you know, a coaching team and build this career, get a master's in exercise science. All of this is what I dreamed about doing. And there was a time where I never, you know, obviously my dreams continue to get bigger, right? Like, this isn't the end point, but like, this is always where I saw myself wanting to be, to just help people and help people with the passions that I have. And that's fitness, that's bodybuilding, that's, you know, training, that's everything related to that. And to be able to keep that vision in my head when all of that negative stuff was happening in my life, I don't know how that was possible. I know a lot of people can't do that. And I just thank God every day that I had that mental strength in me to eventually overcome it and start on the path that I wanted to start on, you know, get back into rehab, get healthy, get back into school, do my prereqs to eventually get into this program step by step. And I think that's one thing also is realizing that you can't put the cart before the horse, right? You need to have a plan, just like in prep, just like in your off season, just like anything. You need to have a plan and you need to have benchmarks along the way that you hit. And my first benchmark was getting into therapy, getting into rehab. My next benchmark was getting my body to a healthy nutrient intake, get my brain chemistry right. The next was to continue with outpatient. Then it was to start my prereqs. Then it was to apply. It's just step by step. And I think a lot of people get overwhelmed with any process, prep, off season, rehab, school, job, you name it. People get too overwhelmed with thinking too far ahead. It's good to have that end goal, right? You have to have that end goal in mind, but you also have to have those short-term goals set up. That's why every client inquiry I send out, that I have them put what their short-term and long-term goals are. Because I need to have benchmarks to set up for them so that when they hit them, and they will hit them, that they get confident and they are more motivated to keep going. And that's all it was. That's how I approached my recovery. That's how I approach everything I do with my business, my coaching, my training. You know, we were talking about it beforehand. I'm dealing with this shoulder and shoulder injury right now. It's frustrating. It sucks. But I have a plan laid out. Is it gonna get better as quick as I want it to? Probably not. I mean, I would love to get back in there pushing heavy weight and train them, you know, doing my bodybuilding training tomorrow, but that's not gonna happen. But you have to be patient and you have to have a plan laid out.
1000%, 1000%. So for anyone listening, if you are ever struggling with anything that, you know, we just spoke about, it's super important that you seek the appropriate professional to help you with that situation. And otherwise, you're going to be digging yourself a very deep hole. And on the extreme end of things, you know, you could be risking your life.
Yeah. And you know, not to go off on a whole side note, but there are things that I'm still even dealing with today physically from all that destruction that I went through and stuff. So it's important that if you do recognize that you have an issue, something is going on, get in right away. Because I let that shit go way too far, way too long, and I'm going to suffer from some stuff for the rest of my life. It's going to be manageable, but it has left lasting results on some physiological aspects of me that I have to now deal with for the rest of my life, because I don't want to say I was ignorant, but I just didn't know. Maybe I was. Maybe I was ignorant, right? And I was just not truthful with myself. And be truthful with yourself, guys. I don't care if you're on one end of the spectrum, you're anorexic, or you have binge, you know, you have another type of eating disorder, you have an injury that's going unprevented, you have another illness that's going unprevented. Step up. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to yourself to get in right away. So,
for sure. So I definitely love the point how you said it. It's fundamental to set those short-term and long-term goals. You know, a lot of times when people set these body composition related goals for themselves, they don't have well-defined short-term or long-term realistic goals. And similar realistic to how you need navigation on your phone, right? You need to know where you're going. Same thing goes for your nutrition and your training. You can't really expect to make much progress if you don't have any sort of way to quantify how much you're consuming, right? Or a strategically structured way for how you could go about getting your training sessions in throughout the course of the week. And what would you say some of your top tips are in regards to setting those short-term and long-term goals and being realistic with them?
I think as far as the long-term goals are, you know, they are what they are, right? We want to get to a certain weight. We want to get to a certain body fat percentage. We want to place in a show at a certain point, right? The long-term goals are pretty self-explanatory. Now, I think when you start breaking it down into the short-term goals, you're going to realize if it's even realistic or not. And I think having someone to talk to, a coach, a mentor,
doesn't have to be us.
Doesn't have to be us, but I mean, I'm sure I can speak for you and say that we'd love to, you know, give you an honest, objective answer. But you need to talk to somebody that you trust, and you need to do something that only you can do for you. And that's be honest, right? Mm-hmm. Like I can sit here and tell you, man, since I was a kid, a dream of mine was to win Mr. Olympia. Is that ever going to happen? No, it doesn't make any other goal that I want to achieve impossible, but
sure.
That's not going to happen for me, especially at 35, right? That's not going to happen for me, not at my size. You know, I even kind of laugh joking about it, but like, you know, when I was a teenager, I was like, yeah,
he's joking about going to see David in 3 years and he's going to be winning the Mr. Olympia.
I'm going to be blown up. But anyways, like you need to have somebody that you can trust, that is not just going to be a yes man or yes woman to you. They're going to give you honest feedback, and you have to be honest with yourself and realize that, listen, if you have a pretty lofty goal, you may or may not achieve it, but you're not going to achieve it unless you're willing to change your lifestyle.
Mm.
And you have to set up these little roadblocks along the way, road stops, whatever you want to call them. And you just have to kind of work backwards from your goal, right? Like I like to look at what the long-term goal is, if it's realistic, and say, okay, how long do we think it might take to get there? And then kind of deconstruct it backwards to see where we need to start and like what kind of benchmarks we need to set up along the way. You know, if someone's coming to me and they're like, you know, I want to lose 50 pounds this year. Okay. Doable. If you're willing to make these certain steps and changes, you know, granted they're metabolically in a position to be able to do so. Right. This is what we're going to have to do and be 8 weeks from now. This is where we're going to have to be 16 weeks from now, 32 weeks from now, so on and so forth. These are the types of changes that you're going to need to make in your life and just set up little checkblocks along the way so that when they accomplish one of the changes, they accomplish a weight loss target. Get them away from thinking about the whole 50 pounds and get them to start thinking about the first 10 and then maybe the next 10. And then maybe the next five and the next five. Because as you, if you're that obese, I'm just using an overweight example. You know, this could go really for anything. It's going to be really pretty easy if you started adhering to a decent program to lose some significant amount of weight right away. But how invested are you going to be when that weight loss slows down? You know, you need to have these little benchmarks along the way to still keep you motivated. Because, you know, I'm actually working with a guy right now that we've been working together for a good part of 2019. And he was 470 or 80 pounds. And just a tremendous guy, tremendous work ethic, completely changed his mindset, right? Like 180 completely changed his mindset. And we set little goals. All right, let's get you down to 450. All right, once we get there, let's get you down to 420. Let's get you down to 400. Let's get you into 300s so you can see that number, right?
It's incredible.
Every little benchmark that he hit, it was like a new light turned on in his head. And that's just one example. I've got examples of clients in the other direction, right? Like, you know, strength. Like, oh my gosh, I can finally squat 225. And oh my God, I can squat 235. I can squat 245. It's being really realistic with your jumps and your benchmarks that you set for those short-term goals. And making sure that you are guiding them along the way as a coach. Because there's going to be stumbles. Even when you set those short little benchmarks to try to get to, there's stumbles at every intersection of your journey that you're going to have to overcome. And you're going to learn things about yourself along the way. And I try to emphasize to people that the end outcome is great, right? Like, but it's what you learn along the way that is really, really going to stick with you. That's what you are going to carry with you for the long haul. So, just try to set realistic short-term goals, achievable short-term goals, and then just be honest with them in their assessment. I'm very brutally honest sometimes. With some of the inquiry, I think so too, but I do it in a very respectful way. You have to know as a coach how to communicate as much as you do. You need to know, you know, metabolic processes. You need to know training. You need to know all this stuff, right? And that's something that fortunately my whole life I've been very, very good at communicating. Both my parents were business owners. Like, I come from a very communicable family. So that has always been a strong point for me, which has been very helpful in coaching. But I'm very honest with people. Like, if they send me back an inquiry form and they're like, you know, I want to do X or Y, I'm like, okay, that's not going to happen. But this is why it's not going to happen. I just don't crush people's dreams. I don't do any of that. I give them an explanation why. And I say, I think this would be a more reasonable goal for you to start with. Let's get to that goal and then let's reevaluate from there. So I think it's very important as a coach when you're dealing with people, with clients or yourself even, to be open to constructive criticism and be open to understanding that you're hiring a coach for a reason, right? You need that objective eye. You don't have it for yourself, which is why coaches hire coaches when they're ready to prep and they're ready to do stuff. You know, some people are very lucky and they don't they can run their own preps if they're a coach. Some people love just having that element taken away from them, right? So they're not second guessing. So I would just tell any client that's reaching out to a coach, like, don't be turned off if they come back to you and say, listen, this is just really not a realistic goal right now. I think that this would be more of a realistic goal for you, and this is why. Be open to that, suggestion, right? Mm. To that information, because you are going to a coach because you need someone to guide you. Let them guide you.
Facts. All great points, man. Setting appropriate goals and being realistic with yourself is fundamental. So just like how with nutrition, you have your macros and your micros, yep. Same thing goes with your goals, right? You got to set those macro goals. And you got to set those micro goals. And that kind of could break into rate of loss. So like the more or the less fat you have, the slower you could potentially take your rate of loss, whether that be 0.5 pounds or 0.5% or 1% per week, right? The more fat you have, the more aggressive you could be with your rate of loss, maybe 1 to 1.5% a week, right? And rate of loss is also going to be dictated by your deadline. So whether you taking a open-ended approach versus having a hard set deadline for your specific goal. Do you have anything specific you like to do with your clients in terms of maybe calculating their rate of loss or keeping them on track to hitting like these weekly guidelines you set for them?
Yeah, actually, I do have this. I do have this formula, this little spreadsheet that I'll put in where they're currently at. It'll factor in their body fat percentage, their weight, what kind of goal, say they want to go from 20% to 10% body fat, just for example, based on whatever rate of loss per week that we agree is acceptable, that they are willing to do, that I as a coach feel puts them in the best position. And it'll calculate out with 100% adherence how long it should take, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I also
that's with 100% adherence.
Exactly, which I always emphasize that with people. Now, I also have a cell that I can put in, like, you know, do we want to do 3 diet breaks? Do we want to do 2? Do we want to do 4? And then that changes how many weeks it would take to hit that goal, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I am very quick to explain to them this is with 100% adherence. That is with your macros, with your cardio, with your weight training, with your sleep, with everything. And I also explained to them that this is not an exact science. The body, everybody's individual metabolism is different. On paper, this is what it should look like. Now, when I start working with people, I explain to them, like, you know, you're an N of one. I have all this data. I have all this research. I have everything at my disposal and my fingertips. But that doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to apply to you. You know, science is about the averages, right? Sure. It's what's going to work best for the majority. Mm. And that's what I love about, I'm still a big bro at heart. Like I grew up in the bro era, but I also have such a love and appreciation for science and the evidence-based community. I like to intertwine the two. I start everybody off with an evidence-based approach. And I still, every move I make has an evidence-based approach to it, right? But I am willing to rely on my instinct, rely on what I've seen through the years, rely on what has worked for me or what has worked for some other clients that I've worked with, right? Because everybody's an individual case study. So you have to approach it that way. So I think having that little mixture of the evidence-based approach with a little bit of the bro science, because what you got to remember, and I know you know this, but I'm just talking in general, the evidence-based movement was based on bro science, right? Everything that they were doing back in the 70s and stuff like that, like they started testing for later in the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s to see if what they were doing made, you know, scientific sense or if it was just pure luck, right? A lot of the stuff that we're finding, you know, that we find is backing up some bro science from back in the day. So I kind of get very defensive when people bash bro science.
Mm. Science is a lot, right? And it gives us answers for hyper specific questions.
Right.
Right. science isn't coaching, right? There's a lot of different variables that like go into that.
I'm glad that you said it that way too, because listen, I don't want to dumb down at all anything, but like you can teach people how to look at a number and based on a calculation, make a change, right? That's not what coaching is. Coaching is the psychological aspect. It's being able to read your client's nonverbal cues. It's being able to read between the lines. That's why when I get feedback every week, when they do their check-ins, I have a lot of information I have them fill out. But it's because I'm a data guy. I love data. But I also want to read between the lines. I want to know, did you have some deadlines at work this week that were just totally rough for you to hit? Did you get in a fight? Like, I don't try to get too personal, right? But like, did you get in a fight with your spouse? Was your kid sick this week? All that stuff affects the adherence of a program. Now, you find a little less of that stuff affecting like, say competitors, because usually when someone's locked in for a competition, they'll do what needs to be done to make sure. Takes. Yeah. And, yeah, that's not one of your slow. Yeah. You got that on a shirt or something. I love it though. I love it. But you find that a lot with the general pop, and you have to be, as a coach, empathetic, but you also have to be not, you have to not allow them to get away with excuses too. So there's a fine line, and that to me is coaching. That is where the coaching comes into play. That's where I justify you spending money to hire me as a coach, right? That's where I justify me putting in all my time and effort with each and every individual check-in and client to put them on the right success. It's not just looking at numbers and say, okay, we're going to decrease you 5 grams of carbs this week or whatever. It's taking the whole picture into account and being able to use your expertise and knowledge and the evidence-based community mixed with a little bit of anecdote that you know and make sure that that person's set up in the best possible position for that upcoming week.
1000%. All great points, man. And I guess this is the perfect segue for how you could set up a successful fat loss phase. So I know for myself, and I know for you, we had like small conversations before we started this. But before I like dieting any of my clients down, the first thing I like to do is optimize their general health in regards to improving their sleep, improving their digestive health, improving, you know, some things they may be dealing with mentally, whether like that be super stressed or, you know, I'd have them do some meditation practices or maybe talk to someone, go on a walk, you know, these different things. And after we optimize their general health, I kind of like optimizing their energy balance. So finding individual energy balance, obviously calculating that out, implementing X amount of food, analyzing the data week to week in the spreadsheet, engaging their individual metabolic rate, right?
Right.
It's kind of hard to put a number on individual metabolic rate, but
that's very individualized.
Right. Implementing some structure, developing a routine, and who knows, with them probably just floating at maintenance calories, training consistently, they're more prone for something like body recomposition. So do you have any important points on there in regards to how you like to approach things with your clients?
Yeah. I mean, I think you summed up a lot of what I do as well. I don't make any of my clients do it, but I highly recommend initial blood work. I think, you know, at least a comprehensive panel. You know, I tell people that I use Private MD Labs. It's like a online requisition form. Like, it's kind of a la carte. You can either get full comprehensive panels. They have like full bodybuilding panels for men and women, kind of testing stuff. Yeah, you can a la carte. Like, if you just want to get your testosterone checked or your estrogen or your B12, your B level, you know, B vitamin levels, your cholesterol, you can just kind of pick and choose. And they send you a requisition. You pay for it. You send a requisition form. You go to the nearest lab core. Results are back in 48 hours, right? So, yeah, is it a little out of pocket? Yeah. I don't think the price is too bad. I mean, that's all kind of relevant to the individual. But I suggest to people, especially if they have not been tracking for a little while, if they are kind of at an unhealthier BMI, or they have other factors from their questionnaire that they fill out that raise some red flags, I say, listen, I'm not going to make you, but I think this would be very efficient for you and I if you were to think about going to get some blood work done. By no means am I an expert at reading blood work, but I know enough to be able to help someone, right? Mm. I know what to
make
look for.
Some adjustments through their nutrition or XYZ to improve those health markers.
Exactly. And so I suggest it to them. Some people do it, some people don't. I just tell them, listen, like, if we get far enough into this plan and you are adherent 100%, we're not seeing the changes that need to be, that I expect to see made at this point, I'm going to ask you again to go get a blood test, because we need to know, are you having thyroid issues, right? Is your testosterone way off as a male? Is your testosterone to estrogen level way off? Things like that. How are your liver enzymes looking like? Things like that. So that is one thing that I would love to be able to have every client go do right from the start, and then do it again 6 months later. Twice a year. I think for the most people, twice a year is enough. I take it, I do once quarterly. That's to check some other stuff that I want to check. It might be a little overkill for most people, but as someone who wants to be a competitive bodybuilder, who is in this industry, who just really cares about optimizing every aspect of my health, I'm willing to do it a little bit more often. So that would be something that, as far as understanding their general health, I would love to have every client do right from the get-go. If not, then I also like to get an inventory of where they're at mentally, what their lifestyle is like. I'm going through my head what my inquiry form entails. Like, I've got how many hours of sleep you get per night. I have how many minutes of cardio you're doing a week, weight training. Mm-hmm. What's your sodium, potassium intake per day? What's your caffeine intake per day? When do you wake up in the morning? Like, it's pretty in depth. Like, I explain to people, like, listen, I know this is a little in depth, but it's going to be way more efficient for you and for me in the long run. It's going to give me information. I have them fill out their best guess of their activity factor, because I factor that into the Mueller equation. And so all this stuff kind of gives me a general picture of what their lifestyle's like, what their general health is like. I can kind of gauge on what their current macros are at. I've got, you know, formulas and calculators and stuff that I use, not bodybuilding.com, none of that stuff, to give me more evidence-based information, right, that I can use to kind of more accurately assess whether or not they have a little metabolic adaptation going on, stuff like that. So there's a pretty in-depth questionnaire that I send out, but I do like to get an idea before I even think about any sort of performance goals or, you know, physique goals. I like to get an idea of what kind of slate I'm working with. Because we have to, you said it right. I mean, you have to get your general health in order if you want any sort of physical or performance goals to follow.
It's fundamental. It blows my mind so much how, and I always use this analogy, you know, a lot of people, when you set these body composition related goals for themselves, they focus on getting from point A to point B, right? And I always use this analogy. Let's say, like, you were to fly to a third world country, right? Yeah. You have no idea where you are, but you rent a car. That car has four flat tires, a broken windshield, dirty oil in the engine. That car is not going to successfully get you to your end goal. You got to first fix everything in between, and then you'll be able to cruise to that end goal as efficiently as possible, right?
Yep. And I like that analogy. That's pretty good.
All great points, man. All great points. Now, do you have any clients who give you a lot of pushback? Let's say, for example, when you tell them, hey, you know, we need a cruise at maintenance for the X amount of weeks, see how you do, and then we could think about dieting down, implementing a deficit.
Yeah. You know, major pushback, I don't think so, because I try to my very best from the very get-go establish a very open and honest relationship with my clients. I tell them from the get-go, like, listen, you're not always going to like what I have to tell you, but please believe me that I'm telling you it in your best interest. Like, your success is as vital to me as it is to you. But your success cannot be more vital to me than it is to you. Does that make sense? Like, you have to be as invested as I am going to be in you. Like,
you're just as invested in their success as you are.
Yep. Like, I have this quote, like, you know, you give me 100%, I'll give you 110%. If you give me 90%, I'm not going to give you 100% because you're not even trying, right? You need to be fully invested. I get stuff comes up. Like, I get it. Be honest with me, though. You have to be honest with me. So that kind of leads into this question. Because I'm honest and I explain a lot of things during my feedback and my check-ins, because I do video feedback for all my clients. So I'm not just giving them new numbers. I'm explaining to them along the way what's happening metabolically. Why are we making the changes that we're making this week? Why are we not making the changes that we're making this week? What you need to do a little bit better of, because I have a daily tracker on another tab on my spreadsheet. So I can see what their day to day is. And it's a lot of information. It's their water intake, their sleep, their steps, sodium, potassium, their macros, of course, everything like that. So, you know, I have certain goals for them. So I can see at the end of the day and at the end of the week what areas they were 95% adherent on or more and what they were not. So I have a very, very big data collection and visual of being able to explain to them, listen, this is the data, right? Like, this is why you're not making the progress that you need to make. It's right there. You can see it. This is my suggestion for you based on this. Until we can get you to a more adherent place in your program, we need to keep you here. We need to keep you at these maintenance calories. We need to keep you at this current calorie intake, whether it be someone trying to reverse or trying to lose weight, right? This is why. And I think having that honest, open communication with them avoids a lot of that pushback. And having my client check-in form and my feedback the way I do, like, I'm very big on transparency. Like, I want them to see what I see. I don't want them just to be like, trust me because I'm saying this. Like, I do. But I also, even though I don't want to go into academia as like a professor, I consider myself an educator. Mm-hmm. I love educating people. I kind of joke with some clients. I'm like, listen, as much as I would love to have you for 5-10 years, my goal is to get you to your goal. My goal is to help you in any way I can, but to also educate you along the way so that when you're 10 years down the road, you know how to do this with or without a coach. So I think it's very important to, I'm trying to think of the word, kind of empower the client a little bit with knowledge. I'm not going to sit here and teach you everything I learned in my master's program, but I do want to provide more value to you than just you hitting your goal. I want you to learn. I want to help you
grow.
Yeah. So I think that's probably why I don't get a whole lot of pushback too much.
All great points, man. Yeah. And like, for anyone listening, you hire a coach, first thing you got to understand is like, coaching is a collaborative effort. You know, you're going to get in what you put out. And the more you communicate, the better, because the more information you're allowing the coach to understand the individual context of your situation, right? Him better understanding that he's going to be able to employ different things that help in terms of educating you. And the more you understand something, the more inclined you are to adhere to it, the more inclined you are to follow through. And total side note, but like, the in regards to fat loss goals, in my opinion, like, the sustainable route, the route you're able to adhere to long term, is the best route you want to take, as opposed to something that claims it'll get you overnight results or fast results quick. You know, how long do you think you'll be able to maintain unsustainable amounts of cardio and training and restriction? How long do you still be able to hold off on those things before you actually revert back to your old ways?
Well, and that's really interesting. You brought up something there. Like, also on my inquiry form, I ask preferences. Like, are you more of a high carb or a high fat person? Because along those lines, like, I want you, do you prefer HIIT over steady state? Like, I want to put you as a client in the best position for you to sustain success moving forward. You know, if someone doesn't like doesn't feel good on carbs and I put them on like 300 grams of carbs and they're not going to adhere to it, it doesn't do either one of us any good. So like understanding your client is huge. Understanding what their preferences are. You have to be adaptable as a coach to be able to take their preferences in mind when creating a plan that you want them to sustain. So.
So when it comes to just general fat loss or maybe even competition prep, do you take more of a leaner approach in terms of just keeping their calories the same on the week to week? Or are you more lean, or do you lean more towards refeeding them and incorporating things like diet break more consistently as you guys diet down?
Yeah, actually, this is really ironic you bring this up. I actually just did a video. It should probably be released probably Monday on my YouTube channel about calorie cycling. And actually, Lane and I just did a video the other day on it that I think he's putting on his IGTV. So this is something that's been on my mind a lot lately, just this topic in general. At the beginning, if someone is coming to me fresh and they just were starting a prep, right? I'm going to have them probably for the first week or two on consistent calories because I, as a coach, want to understand their metabolism. I want to understand if they're going to be adherent also. Mm-hmm. If they're not going to be adherent to steady calories each day, it's going to make calorie cycling a little more difficult, right? Yeah. Now, I don't think there's anything magical about calorie cycling. I think it has its purpose. I think it's a tool. I think it can do a lot of things like break up the mundaneness of, every day eating the same amount of calories. I think that it can definitely maybe help a little bit with maybe a little bit of body recomp when you're in a gaining phase, because maybe you have a high, medium, and low day. Maybe you prioritize your high days for your hardest training days or for a lagging body part day, drive some more nutrients in there during that day. Because when you get in a surplus, obviously, you're pounding a lot of food day in and day out. I think it might be beneficial for your digestive system to have a little bit of a break. It's still going to come down to overall calories for the week and your macros for the week. But I think for some people, either for a gaining phase or fat loss or prep, I think it can be very beneficial. Now, I do think the deeper down into prep you get, I'm a huge component of, adding in refeed days. Mostly what I do is and this is actually part of research I was involved with at University of South Florida, was a refeed study that we did. It was actually, it's going to be published soon. I can't remember what journal Dr. Campbell said it's going to be published in. For those of you who don't know, I got my master's. I know I didn't really go into that. I got my master's from University of South Florida. I did a lot of research for the past 3 years and worked under Dr. Bill Campbell in the Physique and Performance Enhancement Lab. We've got a lot of great studies coming out over the next year that we've been working on. So look out for those. But this diet refeed study really kind of opened my eyes to it. I think it's been about a year and a half now since we actually did the study. But we looked at putting people in a 25% calorie reduction for 5 days. And then 2 days of back-to-back refeed days, or 2 days back-to-back refeed days, where we bumped them back up to their estimated maintenance, but we added all of those, that extra 25%, all back in the form of carbohydrates. And I can't really get into too much of the data because it's not published yet. What I can say is that there was a slightly more favorable lean body mass stat data for the group that did the 5 days low followed by the two refeed days, whereas we did have another group where it was just continuous deficit, but their diet was shorter in time. So I'm a component of that back-to-back refeed day. If somebody is in a low enough body fat and they physiologically can benefit from it. I think the 1 day refeeds are really good from a psychological standpoint. Mostly with anybody, I don't really start them with any refeed days until a few weeks into the program, and I kind of see where their adherence is. Mm-hmm. I see what they're doing, what metabolically they're able to do, how they're operating, things like that. And then I also have some clients where I have put them on like a refeed day during the week, and 2-3 weeks into it, they come to me and they're like, listen, I don't like this. Like, I would much rather be on just steady macros, because when I do go to the refeed day, I have a hard time controlling it. Mm. Meaning like they start having a little bit more carbs and can't stop. Yeah. So that's what I love about the openness of my clients and trying to foster that environment for them to be honest with me, because listen, if it provides you even a percent or two more physiological benefit to do it, that's great. But if it's going to set you back more by doing it, that extra percent or two isn't even worth it. So that's where you really have to be in communication with your clients. And, you know, I try to do not too formal check-ins a week, but I reach out to my clients throughout the week just informally. A lot of them follow me on social media. Some of them don't have social media. I'll shoot a random email like, hey, how are things going this week? Especially if I know the week before that they had a rough week, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, going back to the strategies for fat loss and stuff, honestly, I think there's some mixed research about this. My personal feeling is that if you are not under like 13% body fat for a man, you really don't benefit physiologically from a refeed. Like, you don't need to have a cheat meal. You don't, you know, you need to set up your macros to where you're getting adequate calories each day. I think once you start really approaching that, you know, 10%, definitely single digits, I think that's where there's a lot more of a physiological advantage for a higher calorie day.
For sure.
People get up in arms about like the word cheat meals. And I think people are getting a little too literal with that. Like, guys, it doesn't necessarily mean, like, saying the word cheat meal isn't a bad thing. It's describing a higher calorie meal. Most people just think of it that way. Like, you know, people are like, oh, you shouldn't have to cheat on your diet like that. Well, it's not really like cheating in the sense that people are thinking of it. It's just having a higher calorie day. Mm. People are just still stuck in this terminology of, you know, the 80s and 90s of cheat meals. So I don't really get as much up in arms about it, because I understand what most people are trying to say. They just don't know the correct terminology for it. Mm. So, but here's the thing I'll say about single day, like refeeds and stuff. I do, like I said before, I think that there's a psychological benefit to it. Once again, I don't think that comes into play until you're around that 12% or lower body fat percentage. And it also depends on where you started, right?
For sure.
If you started at 14% and you're at 12%, you don't need it. If you started at 25% and you've gotten down to 12%, you might psychologically need it. You've probably been dieting for a long time. The monotony's coming in. Maybe you're having some physiological changes that could benefit from you know, from a refeed meal and stuff. But I do that very individualized. I don't have a set, like, when you get to this mark, I'm going to give you two, or when you get to this mark, I'm going to give you one. That's where you really, as a coach, have to be in touch with your client. Yep. I have some people that I've dieted down, and, you know, males, they're getting to, you know, 10%, 9%, and they feel great. They tell me they feel great, right? Like, as a coach, I can only go off the data you're giving me, and I look at the progress, and it seems to check out. And so I'm like, listen, if you want to still get a little bit more aggressive, you know, we know where your calorie floor is, you know, where I'm not going to take you under. You know that as soon as I see any slowing or adapting of your metabolism, we're going to kind of back off a little bit. You know, so you really have to be in touch with your client. You have to know them personally. You have to know what their goals are. And that's why, like, honestly, I don't do month to month coaching anymore. I'll do 3 months, but right now, like, I have a big 2020 special going on for 6 months or longer. And the reason I justify that is because, like, I want to get to know you as a client and your body for the long term. Like, I want to know what your trends are, and I want you to be committed to your goals. It's not even about just sticking with me for 6 months or longer. It's about you sticking to your goals right? Because when you invest in something for that long, you have a little bit higher probability of sticking with it, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas I found a lot of times, like a couple of years ago when I started coaching, you know, the month-to-month clients that you would attract, they're not very invested. You know, they tend to fall off right away. So I think that along the lines of the...
I don't really do monthly coaching anymore either, so...
Yeah, I think it's... I think it's smart for coaches when they first start coming up, because you actually, you learn to handle that type of clientele, and you also, you get more repetition, right? You get more chances to try to learn your craft a little bit more, learn different scenarios. But I think that, you know, as a coach, you attract the type of clientele that you want to work with. And when you give justifiable reasons for your packaging or your prices or the services you offer, I think you start attracting the type of clientele that are going to be serious and that you want to put your effort in to working with.
Great points, man. Great points. You said, sorry, I know you said you couldn't reveal too much about it, but you said in the recent refeed study you guys did, the group who refed more consistently, they had those 48-hour refeeds, they preserved more lean body mass? Did they preserve more lean tissue?
Afterwards. So then they had a sorry, I that was part of – I hesitated bringing it up, but it's such a cool study. I can't wait for people to read it. But then there was a 10-week period afterwards where, you know, they could kind of eat at lib and they could trying to think of what I can tell you. Anyways, basically, when it came back to it at the end of that second half of it, the group that had done more the back-to-back refeeds had held on to a little bit more lean body mass.
Awesome. So, I can't wait to see this. So exciting.
Yeah. I'll let you know if I find out when, I mean, you know how these studies go. Like it's not even submitted yet. It could be a year from now until it actually gets published. So we'll see. But yeah, there's been a lot of exciting studies that we've been doing out of USF. Like we did a male versus female recoverability study. That my friend Megan, it was her study that she did. I helped out with that. We also did there's been like three or four of them. We actually did a lower body, like glute hypertrophy study.
Oh, really? Women.
Yeah. That one, I don't know where we stand. Like I said, I wasn't the lead on any of them. I was just kind of helping out with research. So I'm not really sure where any of those stand, but there's a lot of good, hopefully over the next year or so, a lot of good studies coming out of our lab that people are going to really find helpful. Some of them are, you know, first of its kind studies as far as from the physique world. So
For sure, man, 100%. And if you're a coach listening to this, just to sort of recap, you know, how frequently you use refeeds and when you use them is going to be greatly dependent on the context of your client's situation, how much body fat you have. And you also have to read into other things like, okay, how their stress levels are, how their training performance is, and how food focused they are. These are all important variables you need to take into account because, you know, there are like dieting is the least anabolic thing you could do for your body. Right. Yeah. There's a lot of negative things associated with it. Does refeeding consistently help in terms of managing those things? For sure. But does it help to like a great extent that it's going to make such a huge difference? No. And this is where, you know, understanding some of the things that occur when you're dieting, like, okay, I'm going to get hungrier. How do I better manage my hunger? You know, these things will set you up for success to be able to maintain that fat loss phase for a longer period of time, right?
Yep. Yep. And then, I mean, you know, I don't know if we want to save this for maybe another discussion. We can talk about diet breaks too and their implications in, you know, the prep, you know, just the prep world and stuff and getting ready for shows and just in general fat loss. I mean, there's a lot of different things. That's what I love about contest prep and about the research that's being conducted and coming out now is that it's opening up this wormhole of so many different routes that we can dig into. And that's one thing. Somebody asked me, I did like a Q&A on my Instagram, maybe a couple weeks ago. I do them every couple days. But somebody asked me, was like, what did I learn most from grad school, from getting my master's? And I said, honestly, it's that I don't know as much as I thought I knew.
And facts.
I say that like jokingly, kind of, but serious, because yes, I know a hell of a lot more now. Like, the master's program was 100% worth it. Like, I am a smarter coach. I am a smarter individual, smarter influencer than I ever was before. However, what people don't understand is the information that's presented to you on the surface by some people on social media, especially some people that don't really dig into the research as much and don't really have it. They're just giving you generalized stuff. They're just regurgitating what like some people are saying.
Like, yeah,
right. And you don't realize that I'm going to take strength, for example. Okay. One of my favorite classes, and I'm a big nutrition is probably my big forte. Like, that's my big thing, but I love everything about trying to get stronger and build muscle too. One of my favorite classes was neuromuscular physiology. Now, it was one of my harder classes, but we got into so many discussions. Dr. Sam Buckner is our professor. He actually started with us when I started the program in August of 18. He's out of Jeremy Lenicky's lab at Ole Miss. Big blood flow restriction guy. Like, has so many papers. Like, that's what Lenicky's lab was known for, was blood flow restriction. But we really dug into a lot of, why do we get stronger? Why do we grow muscle? How do we grow muscle? Everybody thinks volume, right? Everybody thinks load, intensity, all that stuff. There's just so much more to it. Like, yeah, that's a part of it, but is that even the biggest part of it?
For
you know,
sure.
we started digging in from a strength aspect. We started digging into things like proteins that people have never even heard of, like Titan. And Desmond and all this stuff, and just learning about how, like, why are you stronger on the eccentric portion of it, right? People don't know that. You ask them that, people don't know that. And to be honest, I know it a little bit more, but I'm still confused. And my professor's confused. Like, there's so much research that still needs to be done. And when people hear of studies that come out or new things that are coming out, you have to understand that that's the best knowledge we have at that time. That doesn't mean that 6 months from now, we're not going to have better knowledge, and what we know right now can't change. And there's, you know, I joke with some people, there's probably studies right now that have done that aren't published yet that are can kind of completely change the way we think about dieting or strength or hypertrophy training. Like, there's stuff, because it's a process to get studies published, right? So everything that you're seeing wasn't just done last month. It was maybe done last year. It was maybe done 2 years ago. I know there's a few studies that are still trying to get published from USF that were, you know, 4 years ago. And pretty good studies, too, that are going to blow some people's minds. Now, a lot of the concepts have already been kind of leaked out, but to have the evidence to support it is going to be huge. And so I don't even know where we were going with this, man. I told you beforehand I wasn't going to get off on tangents, but here I go getting off on tangents.
We got to talking about strength, and I might have an answer for you in regards to that question for the episode I filmed with Dr. Scott. So tune into that episode if you haven't.
I will. Man, I binge anything that Dr. Scott is on, man. He is such a good guy. Actually, so he trains at some of the gyms I train at down here. I'm not one of those guys, like, if someone's in there training, I'm not going to go up and talk to them. Like, I have that respect. Like, I don't want someone messing up my flow in the gym, stuff like that. But I have so much respect for that guy. And just to be in the same area as him is great and great opportunity. We message on Instagram every now and then. So we've had a few contacts. But my my chiropractor and my physio, Dr. Scott is his coach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I have a lot of insight to Dr. Scott. I have so much respect for that guy. I would love to somehow, I mean, he probably lives 15 minutes from me. Like, you know, like, to actually just sit down and meet him and talk to him. And, you know, I plan on starting a podcast too. I'd love to have him. I'm going to have you back on as a guest. But just, there's so much wealth of knowledge here in the Tampa area.
For sure.
I feel very, very privileged. I mean, that's how I hooked up with Lane. I mean, so that whole thing came about because of Dr. Campbell. I was volunteering in a lab, like, a year before I even started in the program. And he knew that Lane had a big influence on my recovery and just my journey and wanting to be a coach and all that stuff. And he's like, oh, he's a friend of mine. I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, yeah, when he comes in, I'll let you know. You can come meet him. And he did. And I just told him, like, listen, I respect you. You've really helped me a lot. If I could never pick your brain, let me know. I'd love to take you out for a beer. And then next thing I knew, 2 days later, he was inviting me over to the house and offered me a internship. And, wow. You know, started coaching under him. And then guy was the best man at my wedding. Like, it's just kind of grown into, you know, you just never know with possibilities. And being in this area is just tremendous. You got Dr. Scott, you got Lane, you got Paul Revelia. You know, we've got Dr. Campbell. We've got Lauren Conlin.
Chris Barricat.
Yeah, Chris Barricat. I mean, all these people have now become friends. And it's just great, the community, the tight community that not only like the Tampa area has, but the fitness community in general. I mean, look at you and I. Like, we have never actually really met, but we have so many friends in common. And, you know, Will Grezion, Chris, you know, we've got all these friends in common and stuff. And it's so great to be connected with so many other like-minded people. And that's the biggest benefit, I think, of being able to be in this industry is to get to be around people, learn from knowledgeable people, different experiences. You know, you have different experiences than I do that we can both learn from. You know, we have all these different friends and influencers that have done great things in the industry, both from a research side, a coaching side, a competitor side. And just having that ability to tap into all that knowledge is going to make us better coaches. It's going to make our clients more fortunate in the long run because we'll have more information for them. But just getting to be a part of this research and being a part of this community is a great thing when you use it for good.
For sure. I have nothing to say. That was a great way to sort of bring things to a wrap. I know we generally talked about, you know, optimizing general health, optimizing energy balance. Yep. But I'd love to have you on a future podcast. We talked about refeeds and sort of touched on diet breaks, but I'd love to have you on for a future podcast. And we could potentially talk about either post-show recovery or recovery after your diet, because I feel like trying to summarize that topic alone in an episode is we would be cramming it, right?
Man,
it could be expanded on in so many different ways.
I did a YouTube video on it probably a couple months ago, like recovery versus reverse diet after the show and all that stuff. And I don't know how long the episode was. Maybe I try to keep them to like 15 minutes, like, you know, 15, 20 minutes at the most, just for cardio sake. People doing cardio, they want to watch video, stuff like that. But man, I feel like that's a topic like I could do a 2-hour podcast on. Like, I have different opinions, but also like want to know other people's opinions, and then just kind of wormholes off of each other, and everything's so individualized.
One of the reasons why I love these podcasts, or why I started doing them, is because, like, you know, Instagram, it's great, and YouTube is great, but like it's short form content. You know what I mean? With this long form content, we're not only able to talk about so many different variables associated with XYZ, but we're able to get into like the nitty gritty and really like understand each other's thought processes and beliefs and like, oh, values when it comes to coaching, right?
Yeah, that's another thing is that, like, and I'm not going to get off on a tangent, but people try to find like one person that knows it all, right? You're not going to find it, because each one of us have different, you know why there's so many, this is what I tell people, you know why there's so many different diets and so many different training programs and stuff? Because they all work, but they only work because they fit these certain individuals' personality, enjoyment of training, enjoyment of eating, things like that. It's the same way when you get different guests on here. We're not always going to all go about things the same way, but we can all have success, and we can explain why we do things a certain way, what success we've seen, what success we haven't seen, which I think is equally as important. Mm. And then your listeners, your podcast listeners, can take it for what and apply it to their own life. And I think it's great understanding that everybody is not going to do things the same way, but that doesn't mean that one person's way is better than the others. Although I will say that most of what Dr. Scott says is probably better than most people. So
Dr. Scott always blows my mind by every conversation I have with him.
Yeah.
Maybe we could link something up in the future and do like a little round table with all three of us.
Yeah, man. But, I wish you were closer, man. I could use a co-host for my podcast when I started.
Get some training sessions in, huh?
Absolutely. Next time you're in Tampa, you got to let me know. And I'm sure I'll be recovered by then, so I'll be able to push it hard with you. But I do want to say congratulations. You had a hell of a 2019 competition season.
Thanks, bro. I genuinely appreciate that. Hopefully, 2022, I have some big goals, so we'll see. It's just a matter of putting in the work, right? That's not a problem for me. Problem for me is just like patience. Like patience with everything is super important, whether that be like your work or your relationship. Or that's the great thing about bodybuilding, right? Is it teaches you the value of all these different things like time and consistency and discipline and dedication. It's one of the reasons why I love it so much, and it pours over into other areas of my life, you know?
Yeah. Someone asked me also, like, what do I love about bodybuilding? Like, yeah, I love growing muscle. I love, you know, building a physique. But what I honestly, if I never competed, if I never did anything, I would bodybuild for the rest of my life. Mm. And the reason is because it allows me to go to a different place in my mind that I'm not able to go to in very many other situations. And it teaches me the patience, like you said before, but it also teaches me that you have to be willing to put in time and effort without any results for a while to get to a point where you're going to see results. And it's just that it's that continuous building brick after brick, day by day, building that three-story house, right? Then you get to that three-story house, then you build that two-car attachment on the side, then you build that extension off the back. It's always building that foundation and having something that you can always improve on. Now, it doesn't mean that you're not happy with what you have. It just means that you're always striving to build upon something and make something stronger and better. And I love that aspect of bodybuilding. I love how it challenges me mentally.
1,000%, 1,000%, man. Well, let me thank you for coming on, bro. I genuinely appreciate it. And I look forward to having you on.
Yeah, anytime.
Episodes in the near future.
Anytime, man. I love this. This was great. I think the flow went pretty well. And I think generally, you know, we have a lot of the same aspects, but we also have different routes that we come from, which makes it interesting. So any other topic, man, you just let me know and I'll make my schedule clear for you.
For sure. Awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on. Do you have anything you wanted to say before you go? Maybe some things you have upcoming for the year you want people to look out for?
There's going to be a lot more content coming on YouTube this year. Now that my master's program is over and I have a lot more time to dedicate, I usually still put out about a video a week. But my goal is to try to up the quality a little bit more, give you some more value for that. So, you know, grow my YouTube channel a little bit more. I currently have 5 people prepping for this this upcoming spring/summer. So my goal is to obviously help my clients get first call outs and pick up some more spring/summer. So my goal is to obviously help my clients get first call outs and pick up some more potential prep clients for fall and winter, and just continue to learn, provide useful content for people, get my shoulder healthy so I can get back to training, so I can come out to San Diego and we can get a week of training out there.
For sure, man. I'd love to have you out here and we'll get a great session,
man. Absolutely, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for coming on, David. We'll talk soon.